the latest agriculture news from across the state and the nation, here's Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. Here's your host, Danielle Leal.
Hey, good morning, and thanks for joining us today here on AgNet West Farm City Newsday. We are jumping right into today's program headlines. Brian German is talking with us about implementing water sustainability techniques on a larger scale. Also in today's show, the California walnut production is projected to come down about 15%. Before we hear those reports, I'm starting off today's program discussing new tax proposals that are risking the future of American farms. Let's jump right in. The American Farm Bureau Federation, 46 state farm bureaus, and 280 organizations representing family-owned agribusinesses sent a letter to congressional leaders about tax policies. The letter asked them to leave important tax policies in place as they draft legislation implementing President Biden's Build Back Better agenda. The letter addresses four key tax provisions that make it possible for farmers and ranchers to survive and pass their business on to the next generation. Those include estate taxes, stepped-up basis, the 199A small business deduction, and like-kind changes. The letter states, quote, "The policy Congress enacts now will determine agriculture producers' ability to secure affordable land to start or expand their operation." Adding, quote, "Regardless of whether a business has already been passed down through multiple generations or is just beginning, the key to their longevity is a continued ability to transition when a family member or business partner dies." For this reason, the groups firmly believe the current federal state tax code provisions must be maintained. These tools are as crucial as ever because of the number of farmers and ranchers 65 and over that outnumber those under 35 by 4-1. Over 370 million acres of land will change hands in the next two decades. NAFB contributed to that report, and now let's take a listen to these back-to-back reports with AgNet West, Brian German.
Dairy and cattle producers are taking action to further improve water sustainability efforts within the industry. As the Director of Sustainability for the California Cattle Council and Western United Dairies, Aubrey Betancourt explained one aspect of the new position is to foster communication and move towards increased adoption of proven sustainability practices.
I'm a farmer, and those of us on the ground know best how to solve our problems. And more importantly, there's so much diversity and nuance in everything that we do. Someone ranching in San Luis Obispo is going to have a very different experience and group of needs than someone ranching up around Marysville or somewhere like that. I mean, it's going to be two very different scenarios, but they both know how to solve the same problem, but they're going to need different and unique services, whether that's technical assistance or financial. This is about our members and keeping our farmers and ranchers going. So we're using the information that they give us and tell us where the gaps are to be able to bring that information back up to better create an environment that gets them the support they need. So it is using the lessons on the ground and reverse engineering that up so that we are providing the solutions, not the solutions being provided to us. For me and for California Cattle Council, for Western United Dairies, it is economic viability to achieve environmental outcome. We don't believe that they are mutually exclusive. If our farms and our ranches and our dairies are not economically successful, they will never achieve the environmental goals we're trying to achieve. That includes our own drought resilience. That includes our own water supply development. So everything we're looking at, everything we're doing is through that lens to keep our farmers farming, our ranchers ranching, and our communities vibrant.
California walnut production is expected to decline by about 15% this year. According to the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, walnut production is forecast at 670,000 tons, down from 785,000 tons that were produced in 2020's record crop. While production is expected to come down, estimated bearing acreage saw a slight increase over 2020, with a forecast of 385,000 bearing acres. Instances of widespread freezing temperatures and fall of last year created significant issues for growers. The ongoing drought also created an array of challenges for walnut production. Survey data from the Objective Measurement Report indicated an average nut set per tree of 992, which is a decline of 17% from last year's average. Although projections are down from 2020, this year's walnut crop is still expected to be the third largest of the past 5 years. I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
Thanks, Brian. And wildfires here in the West Coast are causing some air quality concerns. USDA Stephanie Ho has more in this report.
The fires across the northwestern United States are causing air quality concerns for more people than are directly affected by the fires.
As some of these fires, despite recent work to contain them, continue to smolder and produce considerable ash and particulate matter that it's working its way downstream through the remainder of the northwestern United States.
That was USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey.
So even though we've had a bit of a lull in overall wildfire activity in recent days, the hot weather is back and there are significant concerns that we're only partway through this fire season, especially in California, where there's a secondary concern as we move into the autumn. We get into the Santa Ana and the Diablo wind season that can really peak as you move through October and into November.
Therefore,
we're not out of the woods yet, so to speak. We've got a long way to go before we can declare this 2021 wildfire season over.
This is Stephanie Ho for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Stay tuned to AgNet West and this radio station as we continue to provide you with national headlines and local reports, including our livestock report from Randall Wiseman when we return. Are you looking to increase yields up to $1,200 per acre? Well, our friends over at Phycoterra have a soil microbe food that's the glue your soil needs to improve the microbial life and provide growth to your crop and return. With the application of Phycoterra to your soil, it can increase water retention, improve nut quality, and provide longer-term viability. You can stick to growing and let Phycoterra stick to your soil. Head on over to phycoterra.com/almonds to see the difference on your orchards today. That's phycoterra.com/almonds. BioBest Sustainable Crop Management is the leader and most reliable supplier in biological crop protection and pollination. Since 1987, their team has dedicated themselves to bringing you sustainable alternatives for pest management. Interested in hearing more? Reach their representatives at customerservice.na@biobestgroup.com. That's customerservice.na@biobestgroup.com. And a local representative will reach out to you within 24 hours. BioBest North America, defining sustainable agriculture.
WildEye is a proud partner of growers throughout the Valley, state, and nation, providing reliable, affordable, field-proven monitoring and control solutions to help you save time and money and use water effectively. With in-person events back again, the folks from WildEye look forward to seeing everyone at the upcoming Crop Consultants Conference in Visalia or the Western Groundwater Conference in Burbank. With more than 50,000 systems working daily on farms like yours, you can count on WildEye. Visit them today at mywildeye.com.
Welcome back to Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. In today's national headline, sponsored by the American Farm Bureau Federation and the National Association of Farm Broadcasters. A coalition of biofuel and agricultural groups announced opposition to the Environmental Protection Agency's motion to remand but not vacate small refinery exemptions granted by the Trump administration. The coalition includes groups like the Renewable Fuels Association, Growth Energy, National Corn Growers Association, National Biodiesel Board, American Coalition for Ethanol, and the National Farmers Union. The EPA motioned to remand but not vacate the 31 exemptions that the coalition is currently challenging in D.C. Circuit Court. In statements to the court, the groups say that EPA's issuance of the exemptions was arbitrary and capricious and exceeded the agency's authority under the Clean Air Act. The group say in the statement, quote, "While we're encouraged that the EPA intends to reconsider the 31 SREs granted for the 2018 compliance year, we oppose the EPA's motion to remand without a deadline and without addressing the SREs' ongoing damage to the biofuel industry. In addition to seeking a remand, the Biden EPA should ask they get vacated, or at the very least, the EPA should ask the court to set a deadline by which the reconsideration of these petitions must be completed," unquote. These headlines are brought to you by NAFB and sponsored by the American Farm Bureau Federation. Now back to the show.
You're listening to Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. I'm your host, Daniel Leal, tossing it right on over to Brian German with more local news.
A new grant program to provide assistance for pandemic-related health and safety costs for farm workers and meatpacking workers was recently announced by the U.S. Department of Agriculture. A total of $700 million in competitive grant funding will be made available through the new Food and Farm Workers Relief Program. USDA is setting aside $20 million for at least one pilot to provide targeted support for frontline grocery workers. The application process will be announced sometime in early fall and will be open for 60 days. Once the application window is open, USDA will be providing additional information and technical assistance for applying to the program, which will provide relief to farm workers, meatpacking workers, and frontline grocery workers for expenses incurred due to the COVID-19 pandemic. The funding assistance is meant to cover some of the costs for reasonable and necessary personal, family, or living expenses related to COVID-19. The costs of personal protective equipment, dependent care, and expenses associated with quarantines and COVID testing are all examples of what the program is intended to cover. Funds ranging from $5 million to $50 million will be awarded through the grants to state agencies, tribal entities, and nonprofit organizations serving farm workers and meatpacking workers. I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
Well, in today's livestock news, according to new data released this week by the U.S. Department of Agriculture and compiled by the U.S. Meat Export Federation, U.S. beef exports set another new value record in July. Export values climbed 45% from a year ago to just over $939 million. Volume was the third largest of the post-BSE era at 122,743 metric tons. That's up 14% year over year. July beef exports to the Asian markets of Japan, South Korea, and Taiwan were relatively steady with last year, but at significantly higher value. Export volume growth was driven by record large shipments to China and a strong rebound in Western Hemisphere markets compared to year-ago totals. Now, for January through July, U.S. beef exports increased 18% from a year ago. Value was up 30%. Compared to the pace established back in 2018, that was the record year for U.S. beef exports. Shipments this year were up 6% in volume, 17% in value. Now, when it comes to pork, exports in July were steady with last year at 221,809 metric ton, but export value jumped 20% to over $657 million. Pork variety meat exports were especially strong, up 54% from the low total posted a year ago, 16% above July of 2019. They note that variety meat export value was the second highest on record, up 69% from a year ago, 39% above 2019. July pork exports were driven mainly by growth in Mexico, Central America, Colombia, and the Philippines, while chilled pork exports continued to strengthen to Japan and South Korea. Total exports to China declined from a year ago, but pork variety meat shipments to China were the second largest on record. If you'd like to see a detailed summary of the January through July red meat export results, you can go to the USMEF website. That's usmef.org. And in response to the severe drought conditions across the western part of our country and Great Plains, USDA is saying it plans to help cover the cost of transporting feed for livestock that rely on grazing. USDA will update their Emergency Assistance for Livestock, Honeybees, and Farm-Raised Catfish program, otherwise known as ELAP, to immediately cover feed transportation costs for drought-impacted ranchers. While at the White House this week, Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack announced the help.
We know that these farmers, particularly in the western U.S., are going to be confronted with having to truck or rail feed from far distances, and that's going to be an incredibly increased cost to them. So we're going to use this emergency program to provide up to 60% of the additional costs that they're incurring above and beyond what they would normally incur for transportation expense. And for limited resource farmers, it could be as high as much as 90% of assistance and help.
Now, ELAP already covers the cost of hauling water during drought, and this change will expand the program to cover feed transportation costs where grazing and hay resources have been depleted. For more information, contact your local USDA service center. I'm Randall Wiseman for AgNet West.
The 10th Annual National Dairy Council New Product Competition is looking at innovation in a new way. The competition is seeking college students to develop dairy-based products for gamers. The NDC notes that 94% of young people play video games in some capacity. Also that 60% of gamers say video games help them to be social. And 90% of gamers ages 21 to 35 regularly eat food and drinks while gaming. Which is why this competition will provide value to its consumers. Students can submit their innovative dairy products by January 17th, and they'll be judged by experts across the dairy industry. First, second, and third place winners will receive cash prizes and will be recognized at the American Dairy Science Association annual meeting in Kansas City come June of next year. If you have an innovative dairy product that will be suitable for gamers, you can submit your application by visiting usdairy.com. If you have generic questions, you can contact Rohit Kapoor at Rohit. That's rohit.kapoor@dairy.org. It's time for us to head out for a short break. We'll be right back with more of the day's agriculture news and farm features when we return. Are you looking to increase yields up to $1,200 per acre? Well, our friends over at Phycoterra have a soil microbe food that's the glue your soil needs to improve the microbial life and provide growth to your crop and return. With the application of Phycoterra to your soil, it can increase water retention, improve nut quality, and provide longer-term viability. You can stick to growing and let Phycoterra stick to your soil. Head on over to phycoterra.com/almonds to see the difference on your orchards today. That's phycoterra.com/almonds. BioBest Sustainable Crop Management is the leader and most reliable supplier in biological crop protection and pollination. Since 1987, their team has dedicated themselves to bringing you sustainable alternatives for pest management. Interested in hearing more? Reach their representatives at customerservice.na@biobestgroup.com. That's customerservice.na@biobestgroup.com. And a local representative will reach out to you within 24 hours. BioBest North America, defining sustainable agriculture.
Wild Eye is a proud partner of growers throughout the Valley State and Nation, providing reliable, affordable, field-proven monitoring and control solutions to help you save time and money and use water effectively. With in-person events back again, the folks from Wild Eye look forward to seeing everyone at the upcoming Crop Consultants Conference in Visalia or the Western Groundwater Conference in Burbank. With more than 50,000 systems working daily on farms like yours, you can count on Wild Eye. Visit them today at mywildeye.com.
Welcome back to Farm City News Day by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Neal. As we do every month at the beginning of the month, we air Farm Bureau's Farmside Chat, where American Farm Bureau President Zippy Duvall talks about current issues facing agriculture. Today, he's talking with first-generation organic farmer here out of California, Dick Paixoto, all about farming in California.
So, Dick, introduce us to your farm and the history of how you decided agriculture is what you want to do in life and how you got to where you're at.
Sure. Go back to, I actually started having an interest in farming when I was about 10, 12 years old. I was riding with my dad. He was actually a pesticide salesman and sold pesticides for a living. So I learned a lot about agriculture from him, talking with him to the different farmers and learning how they do things. And he told me how they do things, why they do it and that. So we've got a lot of vegetables in this area. So that was kind of my focus on the vegetables. And when I got into high school, I decided that's what I wanted to do. I was working in a local grocery store. And at 17, I decided to just branch out on my own and start farming on my own. So went and rented three different pieces, about 30 acres total, and started growing, when I was a senior in high school, started growing beans, squash, pickling cucumbers for Del Monte, and doing pretty much all the work myself. And my ag teacher from the high school came and kind of helped me along the way, too. And he was an ex-farmer that was a teacher, and he kind of helped me get started, too. Came out and drive tractor after school and that. So over a period of years, grew that business up to about 20 years of farming conventionally, and just decided about 25 years ago, decided to get into the organic deal, which is probably a little bit early in the whole development of organic. But we kind of jumped in and started a sideline called it Lakeside Organics. And we were 2,500 acres of conventional at that time. And we started this little 50 acre organic farm, and all the local growers kind of called it my garden. They thought it was kind of funny that I was farming this 50 acre garden out there with about 30, 40 different crops. And so we actually named it Lakeside Organic Gardens, and the name's kind of stuck over the years. And we just built it up over the years to where now we've dropped the conventional completely, and we're about 2,000 acres of conventional of organic here in the Paro Valley, and about 1,200 acres in Southern California. So it's a pretty sizable operation. Like I say, I think we're probably the largest, you know, solely organic grower shipper in the United States, I think, right now. So it's been a wild ride for a lot of years.
So, Dick, when I was on your farm, it was amazing for me to stand there in the field. You see a row of houses along the beach, and just the other side of the I don't know what you call it, the hump of dirt behind the houses, and then your field start. And it was cool and comfortable that day, where it was just hot everywhere else. And it was just a pleasure seeing the beautiful vegetables that you grow there. Tell us, how far across the country do your vegetables reach in your market?
So we basically ship to almost every state in the United States through national distribution. That we go all the way to the East Coast with outfits like Publix and Whole Foods, and we go into like Sprouts markets, a lot of different national chains that we go to. So, and we're in seen our products. One of my guys was up in Alaska last week and saw our items on the shelf in Alaska there through Fred Meyer Stores, which is a division of Kroger's. And we go have quite a presence in Western Canada. We don't do a lot in Eastern Canada, but we do a lot in Western Canada. So, and we're in through a chain in Hawaii also. We're Whole Foods in Hawaii and down to earth in Hawaii. So pretty much in every state have, pretty solid in a lot of the national organic chains.
So it's interesting to me that you decided to go totally organic, because we have a lot of farmers that do some traditional, some organic, and what's a lot of people don't understand is there's plenty of room in the market for both. Both we have great producers that do it traditionally and organic, but I know that there are challenges in organic and there's challenges in traditional ways of farming, and a lot of those challenges are the same, but being in organics, you have to do it differently. Tell us a little bit about those challenges, and how long did it take you to learn how to handle the issues that you were dealing with them differently in traditional farming?
I think the big thing is what we kind of had to relearn. Like I said, my dad was a pesticide salesman, so I was always taught, if you saw a pest, you'd spray, and if you didn't see a pest, you better put preventive sprays on. And organically is a whole different farming method, so that's kind of why I decided to drop the conventional, because it does take a lot of more micromanagement to manage the organic farm. And a lot of what we do is, we have a saying that, we farm the soil and the soil grows the crop. And so we don't have any magic fertilizer that we can go out and buy on conventional days. I could go out and put things like calcium nitrate on and get a quick release from that. But there's really no tools like that in organic. So we have to plan farther ahead. So a lot of our fertilizer program is based off of building the ground up so the ground will grow the crop. So we put a lot of compost on, a lot of cover crops to build up the soil. It's part of what we do, and we want that soil to be tuned up at all times, so we're constantly tweaking it to, we're putting on natural gypsum or natural lime to adjust pHs and that. So we're constantly doing that, and then when we plant that soil, it should grow the crop, and then we have minimal inputs to make it work. And so we're looking more long-term, so some of our ranch we've been on for 20, 25 years building the soil up. So that's part of the, what we do as far as the soil. And then as far as pests, it's kind of actually, if you think about it, it's actually a pretty easy formula. So what we do is we try to think, what would Mother Nature do? Because before we were around, obviously she kept everything in balance, because otherwise we wouldn't have the crops we have. But a lot of the pests that we have natural predators. And so it's a matter of finding those natural predators and trying to figure out, not so much to buy those and put them out in the field. We actually try to create a habitat to attract them to the field. So a lot of times that's sweet alyssum or sweet anise that we let go to seed, or cilantro, or different things like that. So a lot of times you create that, and then we create a habitat around the field so they can overwinter. So a lot of times we have hedgerows around the edge of the field. In the wintertime, when there's no crops in the field, our natural predators can overwinter. They can basically camp out in the hedgerows around the field, be ready to go to work the next spring. So our big factor is what makes it attractive? And so without any kind of pests, there's nothing to attract the beneficials. So it's kind of a balancing act to have some pests out there to attract the beneficials, and the beneficials will come in and clean those up for us. So, one of our big ones is a serpent fly, which basically attacks the aphid. And so if we create the habit that serpent fly will come and scour the fields and look for aphid colonies, they'll lay their eggs right amongst that aphid colony. Then when they're hatched, they basically eat, the larva eats that, and it goes through the whole life cycle, becomes an adult, flies back to the sweet alyssum that we have planted, and the life cycle goes over, but we end up with a pretty darn clean plant. So I think that's the thing, is a lot of times you just got to think, what did Mother Nature do before? There is sprays we can use organically, different soaps and oils and different things like that. We try to use those as a last resort. So I'd say most of the crops we're able to do without spraying at all. So that's kind of how we do it.
So you talked a little bit about pests. What about weeds? I know, most of our conventional farmers just spray a pre-emergent to keep things coming up. I think I saw on your video where you allow them to come up, and then the word would be scorch them. Can you explain a little bit about how you do that?
Yeah, what we do a lot of times, we'll pre-irrigate. We'll form the beds that we're going to plant on, and then we'll go ahead and we'll pre-irrigate the ground, and we'll get the weeds growing. And then if we plant seed, we'll plant that seed right in amongst the weeds. And then we'll wait about 3 or 4 days. A lot of times we'll put a piece of plexiglass out on the ground right over where we planted that seed. So the seed will sprout underneath that plexiglass usually a day before it'll come up naturally. So we'll watch that plexiglass, and then just before those, when we see our plants sprouting underneath that, that'll tell us go ahead and get the burner. So we'll bring in the burner the following morning, and we'll come in, and usually we have about 20-foot wide propane burner, and we'll burn all those weeds that have sprouted over there. And by doing that, then you have that one flush of weeds. A very few weeds will come up after that. So a lot of times we can get our crop up, we can get it growing, we can get some get a little bit of height to it, and then we'll be able to cultivate the rest of the weeds out. So you know, one of our stories, like the cilantro, we used to pay between $1,200 to $1,600 an acre to weed one crop of cilantro when we started organic. Now with a weed burner, our weeding cost is about, I think right now we're at about $76 on average for the year for weeding costs. So it's substantially changed the whole equation. And a lot of time with transplants, we'll do the same thing, but we'll pre-irrigate, we'll burn it right the day we're going to plant the transplants, and then we'll go and put our plants in, and then we got a head start on the weeds, so works pretty good that way.
That was just a portion of their conversation. To listen to the full episode, visit fb.org. It's time for a break, but stay tuned for more agriculture news. Are you looking to increase yields up to $1,200 per acre? Well, our friends over at Phycoterra have a soil microbe food that's the glue your soil needs to improve the microbial life and provide growth to your crop and return. With the application of Phycoterra to your soil, it can increase water retention, improve nut quality, and provide longer-term viability. You can stick to growing and let Phycoterra stick to your soil. Head on over to phycoterra.com/almonds to see the difference on your orchards today. That's phycoterra.com/almonds. BioBest Sustainable Crop Management is the leader and most reliable supplier in biological crop protection and pollination. Since 1987, their team has dedicated themselves to bringing you sustainable alternatives for pest management. Interested in hearing more? Reach their representatives at customerservice.na@biobestgroup.com. That's customerservice.na@biobestgroup.com. And a local representative will reach out to you within 24 hours. BioBest North America, defining sustainable agriculture.
Wild Eye is a proud partner of growers throughout the Valley, state, and nation, providing reliable, affordable, field-proven monitoring and control solutions to help you save time and money and use water effectively. With in-person events back again, the folks from Wild Eye look forward to seeing everyone at the upcoming Crop Consultants Conference in Visalia or the Western Groundwater Conference in Burbank. With more than 50,000 systems working daily on farms like yours, you can count on Wild Eye. Visit them today at mywildeye.com.
Welcome back to Farm City Newsday by Agnet West. In today's national headline, sponsored by the American Farm Bureau Federation and the National Association of Farm Broadcasters. Iowa Representative Sidney Axne announced she secured $1 billion in funding for biofuels infrastructure spending in the House's first draft of the Build Back Better Act. The goal of the funding is to support the expanded availability and use of renewable fuels. She says it's a great thing for rural communities, the ag economy, the planet, and for hundreds of thousands of Americans whose jobs will be supported by the investment. Axne says, quote, "Make no mistake, this was no easy fight. For months, I've been helping teach others in D.C. about some of the key advantages of biofuels, including the fact it's been proven to be twice as clean as fossil fuels," unquote. The Iowa representative says while she won't announce her final decision on whether she'll support the package until she sees the full bill, seeing the investments included in the legislation will be a crucial part of her choice. House committees are beginning to consider their sections of the Build Back Better Act, which tackles a range of issues like infrastructure, healthcare, education, and climate. Included in the initial draft is $1 billion in funding for the USDA to provide grants over the next 8 years to expand biofuel infrastructure. These headlines are brought to you by NAFB and sponsored by the American Farm Bureau Federation. Now back to the show.
You're listening to Farm City News Day by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal, rounding out today's show, possible reasons why there's no change in the American household food insecurity rate.
USDA's latest annual look at household food security in America shows no percentage change year over year in the number of households that were food insecure at some point due to lack of resources. 10.5% for both 2019 and 2020. Yet, as Agriculture Department economic researcher Alicia Coleman-Jensen explains,
the COVID-19 pandemic affected public health and the economy, and there were a number of changes to federal, state, and local policies, programs, and benefits. There were a number of changes to existing nutrition assistance programs and additions of programs, and there were responses by charitable organizations.
Plus, substantial increases in cash assistance and unemployment benefits in 2020.
And all of these factors may have affected food insecurity.
In addition, a special section of the report looks at food insecurity of households by employment effects of the pandemic. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
To get more information on the topics you heard today, visit AgnetWest online at agnetwest.com. Get even more connected by following us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter by searching at Agnet West. And our team of Brian German at Brian German Agnet West and Danielle Leal with at D Leal Agnet West. This has been Farm City Newsday by Agnet West.